running on, running hard, taking no third time. Baby, start me up. Baby, start me up with that style. You make a dead man come. 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 You make a dead man come.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush continues to consult with others as he charts a new course in Iraq. Any changes in the president's policy are expected to be announced in a speech he will give sometime before Christmas. Today, President Bush went to the State Department to go over diplomatic options. After the meetings, which included Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Vice President Dick Cheney, the president said, quote, "This administration wants to succeed in Iraq," end quote. In the western Anbar province, a Sunni stronghold, a U.S. military helicopter made a hard landing today during a routine flight. The U.S. military said 18 of the 21 Marines on board were injured. This was the third U.S. military aircraft in the past 2 weeks to go down in that region. In Baghdad, the U.S. military said today that 4 U.S. soldiers were killed and 3 were wounded by 2 separate roadside bombs. That brings the U.S. death toll in December to at least 46. Around Baghdad today, at least 51 Iraqis were killed in violence. Iraqi President Jalal Talabani, a Kurd, is rejecting the Iraq Study Group report, saying its recommendations are an insult to the people of Iraq and dangerous to the country's sovereignty and constitution. In Gaza City today, 3 children and an adult were killed in what is being called a botched assassination attempt. The children were the young sons of a senior Palestinian intelligence officer. In Tehran, a conference on whether the Holocaust really occurred began today at the initiation of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The meeting has been condemned by Israel and Germany. In Santiago, Chile, supporters of ex-General Augusto Pinochet, who died yesterday of heart failure, filed past his coffin today. The 91-year-old former dictator was denied a state funeral. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan gave a farewell address today at the Truman Presidential Museum and Library in Independence, Missouri. He warned the United States not to give up its democratic ideals while fighting the war on terrorism. A federal judge in Oregon announced today the settlement of a lawsuit brought about by 150 people against the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Portland. They claim they had been sexually abused by priests. The dollar amount was not disclosed. Ohio Democrat Representative Dennis Kucinich said he is planning to run again for president in 2008. He said his party is not pushing hard enough to end the Iraq war, and he disagrees with how some are handling it. This is Quality News Network.
Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. The Golden State Theater is proud to present 2-time Grammy winner vocalist Diane Scherr. You've heard her perform with Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, the Count Basie Orchestra, and Ray Charles. Now, don't miss Diane Scherr in a quintet setting Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. Diane Scherr has performed to sold-out audiences around the world. Diane possesses a 3.5-octave range and has been called the new First Lady of Jazz. The historic Golden State Theater is located at 417 Alvarado Street in downtown Monterey. Tickets for Diane Scherr and her quintet are just $29 and $39. For reservations, call 372-3800. The historic Golden State Theater proudly presents Diane Scherr and her quintet Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. 831-372-3800. And on the web, www.goldenstatetheater.com.
The Space Shuttle Discovery is preparing to dock with the International Space Station later today. Then the crew will begin the major task of replacing the station's electrical system. In Cedar Falls, Iowa, nearly 3 dozen people became ill and 14 of them were hospitalized from E. coli contamination after they ate at a Taco John's restaurant, which is not part of the Taco Bell E. coli outbreak that has mostly hit the Northeast. DP, or Dubai Ports World, the Dubai-based company, announced today it will sell all of its U.S. holdings thanks to AIG Global Investment Group, the price was not disclosed. The Sunday Times of London reports that the bidding for the Aston Martin unit of Ford Motor Company could reach $1.2 billion with the entry of a Syrian-born billionaire to the short list of potential buyers. The CFO of Hewlett-Packard announced he is stepping down, the latest of several top directors to leave the computer company. The J.P. John Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles will return a 4th century B.C. wreath back to Greece. Greek cultural officials had alleged that the gold wreath was illegally removed from their country. And California is about to take the title as the nation's top cheese producer from Wisconsin, the current holder. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $61.27 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 21 points at 12,328, NASDAQ up 6, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes past the hour, and welcome, brothers and sisters, to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, Monday night. Glad to be back with you. I hope you all made it to church yesterday. Of course, another week begins, and just because it's not Sunday doesn't mean it's no reason not to be worshipful. We begin this evening rather than with our usual lineup of an examination of the things that are going on in the liberal media that tears down this great and godly nation. We begin this evening instead with an interview. We are joined this evening by Judge John H. Wilson. Judge Wilson is a criminal court judge in New York City. He is the former law chairman of the Bronx County Conservative Party, and he is also, as I note, an author, and not just an author of any book. This is an important text. It's a children's book, or one could argue that it is a children's book, brothers and sisters, because it's called Hot House Flowers. It's beautifully illustrated, and it is quite possibly one of the most fascinating, and the clear-eyed examinations of the illegal immigration crisis that this nation faces. Judge Wilson, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It is my honor, Your Honor. Sorry.
Thank you.
Let me ask you first of all, what brought you to write this book? You spend day in and day out on the criminal bench there in a very, very liberal place. What made you want to sit down and address the immigration issue, and particularly to address it for children?
Well, my wife and I have a 4-year-old son. And I just was not satisfied with a lot of the literature that I was seeing available for children. And the intention of the book wasn't just to be about the issues of illegal immigration. The book is intended to instill patriotism in the young. It's meant to give parents the opportunity to discuss with their children broader issues of defense of country, defense of home. The crucial part of the book, to me, is the argument between the flowers and the hothouse once the dandelion sends her seeds into the hothouse. And the flowers are endlessly debating about what to do about this problem while the seeds of the dandelion grow and grow until there's no resources left for the flowers in the hothouse. That debate is what I was focusing on more than anything else.
So the flowers in the hothouse are American citizens.
Well, actually, I look at this in a very broad sense. I think of this as applicable to any nation that has a culture that they feel worthy of defense. And the problem I see is that children today are not being taught to defend their country, to defend their homes. So I wanted parents to be able to have the opportunity to discuss these issues with their children.
So much as is the case in, say, France, where flowers are on the table almost at every meal, their problems with Muslim immigration, or the Germans' problems with Turkish immigration. This you're saying this is something that can be applicable around the globe.
I thought of this as a story, an allegory that can apply to many situations in many cultures. This is an issue and a problem that's been faced by cultures the world over for centuries now. Will probably be faced by cultures and countries in the years to come. Today's problem in America is illegal immigration. I feel this book is broad enough, a big enough allegory to apply across the centuries.
Because across the centuries, people have moved around the planet, and if you think about the ancient Romans, they were overrun by the Visigoths, for instance, right?
Yes.
Now, you characterize I read it in terms of my cultural experience. I read it in terms of the hothouse being America.
That's a fair interpretation. And to be honest, as I wrote this book, I'm an American, and of course I'm coming from an American perspective. But I wanted to write something that was a broad enough allegory that parents could use it to just instill in their children a desire for patriotism. Another issue that I wanted to allow parents to present to their children is the concept of God. You know, in the book, when the dandelions have overrun the hothouse and the flowers are too weak to do anything about it now, it's the master of the hothouse who comes back and removes these dandelions from his hothouse. I wanted parents to be able to discuss the issues of salvation and the concept of God with their children, and that's another thing that I just did not see in almost any of the children's literature available today.
And so in your book, the gardener who runs the hothouse, that would be the God concept, or the master, as you refer to him.
I think so, clearly.
One of the most interesting, because I don't think there's a greater threat to America than liberalism, Judge. I found it very interesting. One of my favorite characters in the book was the Yellow Rose.
I wanted to point out the intolerance of those who consider themselves the extreme left wing. I just wanted to show that it seems to me, as I wrote this, that there are people who, and they consider themselves very left wing, they consider themselves liberal. Well, they're not. They're very intolerant, and they're busy telling people what to do and how to live, while the problems that concern people are not being addressed.
And in this particular instance, when the nasty weed seeds come into the hothouse, the yellow rose there is telling her sister flowers in the hothouse that there's no such thing as a weed. It sounds like the way the liberals talk about there's no such thing as an illegal immigrant, doesn't it? I mean, that was your intent, wasn't it?
Well, that's one of the intents. I mean, again, it's supposed to be broad, and it's supposed to apply to more than just this parallel situation. But that is a very fair interpretation. I have no problem with anybody looking at it in that way.
And in fact, the hothouse, and I don't want to give away the book. And by the way, the illustrations, Judge, are just gorgeous. They're
thank you.
What is her name?
Marina Sereskaya.
Sereskaya.
Ukrainian, born in the Ukraine and moved here to America, and is a naturalized citizen.
I was going to say, and the key is she moved here legally.
That's right. You know, I always I've heard criticism that I'm allegedly anti-immigration, which of course is ludicrous. This is a nation of immigrants. My family were immigrants to this nation too, and anybody who calls you anti-immigrant is just confusing the issue for whatever their purposes are. If I'm so anti-immigration, it's interesting I use a Ukrainian native to our country. as an illustrator for the book.
Well, I think that was very forward thinking of you to do so. Now, you know, to work with the analogy a little bit. At one point, the weeds just about take over the hothouse.
Yes.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot of people seeing past the messages of people of flowers like the yellow rose.
Well, it's certainly meant to be a cautionary tale. I mean, the whole idea of being able to present this issue to children is to let them see the natural effects of letting any situation get out of control. So you can even apply it if you wanted to your children cleaning their room. You could say, look, if you don't clean up your room, it's going to get out of control and it'll be impossible to do it in the future. So you can use this lesson on many different levels. But I of course, did see the parallel with the illegal alien problem, clearly as I wrote it, but I thought of it in those broader terms, that parents would be able to use this book to teach their children values that they want to pass on to their children.
Judge, is this something that that also had a seed? Oh, there we are with the seeds again. Is this something that had a seed in things that you see coming across the bench as well?
Well, I try to separate the work that I do from being an author of a children's book. I mean, naturally, my life experiences are part and parcel of what I write, but the work that I do in criminal court, while I may see people who are illegal aliens in this country as well as people who are legal immigrants, my focus is more on the crime they're charged with and whether or not they're a flight risk. Naturally, if someone's an illegal alien, they're going to be more of a flight risk than somebody who's a legal alien.
They don't have roots in the community.
Oh, there's more. It's more factors that go into that analysis than just that. You know, here in New York, our issue with illegal immigration, I've been discovering, is different from what I'm seeing across the rest of the country. We don't have the influx of illegal aliens from only one place. We have people from all over the world here, and in one night, I'll see people from a variety of countries, 20, 30 countries in one night. So we have people from all over the world. But many of the immigrants we have here, they have jobs. They're not receiving public assistance. And the analysis for me on the bench is different. I just consider it one of the factors of determining whether or not bail should be set in their cases. It's not the deciding factor.
Let me ask you, this is outside the scope of the book and outside the scope, frankly, of your work on the bench, but do we have enough prisons in America for the illegals?
Well, if you are restricting prisons to only illegal aliens, I don't.
Well, I mean, we've got plenty of murderers and arsonists and rapists and stuff, but you know, we were told in the debate in the last year that there are 12 million illegals here in America, Judge.
Numbers like that, it's hard.
They're lawbreakers.
Well, that's the main point of what the issue here is. Many people are trying to confuse the issue by mixing legal immigrants with illegal immigrants and forgetting the fact that an illegal immigrant is breaking the law. And it's as flat an analysis as that. It is breaking the law. And the people who want open borders, unfortunately, are combined with corporate interests that are encouraging illegal migration and exploiting the illegal immigrants mercilessly. One of the things I've hopefully exposed by the use of this book is that these folks are being mercilessly exploited, that they're in the construction industry and they don't have the proper safety training, they don't have the proper safety equipment, they're being underpaid drastically. The women are being forced into sexual servitude as prostitutes. The entire situation is completely intolerable and a wholesale violation of the law.
You know, in a way, if you ever do a revision of the book, Judge, I think you could put a guy with a push mower outside the hothouse, blowing those weed seeds into the hothouse, and the guy with the push mower could be the corporate interests that bring the illegal operators.
That's interesting. I didn't look at it that way, but that's interesting.
Well, Judge, I thank you. I thank you very kindly, and I wish you and your wife the best with your with your 4-year-old. Beyond this issue, 4-year-olds are a challenge all in of themselves, and I have no doubt that you're going to bring your child up the right way.
Can I add two things just very quickly?
Yes, please. We should talk about how to get the book.
The book is available on Amazon.com. This is a self-published work. It's available on Amazon.com. You log on, you put in the name of the book or my name, you come up with the book, Hot House Flowers. Also, the second thing that's very important is a portion of the proceeds of this book go to benefit the Michael Glover Scholarship Fund. He was a Marine who was a law student at my law school, Pace School of Law in White Plains, and he joined the Marines, put his education on hold, and lost his life in Fallujah this past August.
Oh.
To honor his sacrifice, I wanted to be sure to make a contribution of a portion of the proceeds to a scholarship fund being set up at my law school, Pace in White Plains.
Well, that is patriotism at its highest level, Judge, and I honor you and I praise you for what you've done there. Because, well, I'm sure we don't have, you've got to get back to the bench, I understand. Like you said, this is a broad analogy that you have written here, and we could probably spend an hour on how this relates to Iraq. The people who flew, and you're in New York, you're closer to it than I ever was, the people who flew those planes into the buildings were not, they didn't come over here the day before they did it.
Now, it's interesting you bring that up. There's a group called the Coalition for a Secure License. I was just at a fundraiser for their organization, and they mentioned that of the 19 hijackers of the planes on September 11, between them they had 35 different driver's licenses from different states, different identities. And in fact, Muhammad Atta himself had 8 different driver's licenses.
It sounds to me like it's time for a national ID.
Well, what I think is you have to contact your politicians and get them moving on these issues. As a judge, I can't make any political recommendations. I can't get involved.
Right, you're not an activist, Judge, and you don't want to legislate from the bench.
But I encourage people, call your politicians, hound them on this issue, and if you're not happy with their response, vote for people you want to take care of this problem.
Well, Judge, thank you very kindly. And again, hothouseflowers at Amazon.com. We wish you all the best, Judge, and God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Take care.
Take care. Let's take a break. This is the Head On Radio Network. Twenty-two minutes after the hour, you know how to get through the program, brothers and sisters. God bless you. 877-443-2366.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I gladly stand up next to you when they met her still today. There ain't no doubt I love this land.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Her name was Dandelion.
Last night, the little angel came pumping on the floor.
Her name was Yellow Rose.
She said, come, baby, got a license for love. And if it expires, pray help from above. We call.
27 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. And I want to be straight up right out, you know, right. That was not an original idea on my part. It was done to great effect several years ago by everyone's hero, Mike Malloy. But you know, I booked this guy. I wanted to read. See, the way this stuff works, you know, there's not a lot of people out there that will tell you the inside baseball of some of this. I get, as I've told you from time to time, right-wing solicitations. Most of the time, they won't come on the show because I tell them who I am right up front. And they won't converse on a level playing field. So I had to create a situation in which they would. And this book... I mean, I could stop the show right now and just start shuddering and not finish for the evening. This is a book to teach bigotry to children. This is a book to teach children that any children. This is a book to teach children that women who scrub toilets and speak Spanish are their enemies and are counter to their patriotism. Sweet Jesus. Sweet Jesus. I hope you will forgive me for the deception and the dishonesty. I could do this kind of stuff. I've told you from time to time, I have told you, that I could pretend to be a right-winger. And, you know, I can. I don't know if I could pull it off for 3 hours. Because it would make me physically, violently ill at the level of depravity that one has to have in one's soul in order to be a Republican or a right winger. You know, Agnes looked at me and said, "My eyes are itching." And what she said in production chat, I can't. Well, I could, but I'm not gonna repeat on the air. No, you're not.
It wasn't bad. You're going to make him think I was...
But this is... the heavy-handedness of the yellow rose. You know, us liberals, we're cards. We're yellow. We don't want to fight no wars. We think all them wars is bad. God. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Sarge joins us from Southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I enjoyed that. I live around these jokers, and I mean really in gross numbers. And sorry about the pun there, but
I don't think it was a pun. I think it was dead up truth. But you know,
and this, which brings me to what I wanted to tell you about our good friend Jim Yancey.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he has really been working his butt off trying to straighten out some of the right wing trash that's going on in on the Mississippi coast. And today, I called a fellow named Dave Vincent. Dave is the station manager, the director for WLOX Television, Biloxi, Gulfport, Pascagoula, and that is the main station, TV station, that people tune into to get the news for South Mississippi.
Okay.
On the coast. Today, the guy actually more or less called Jim Yancey and myself liars.
Say what?
Yes, he actually had the audacity. When I called him, I originally called him and asked him about this routine that one of his announcers did on the show they have called Good Morning South Mississippi, where the guy got up about 6 months ago and did a Nazi salute and said, "Today is the day that Hitler rose to power. We salute you, Hitler," and he clicked his heels together and gave a Heil Hitler, you know. And of course Rhonda, the woman that co-hosts the show with him, was sitting back just a giggling. It's so funny, you know?
He's a wit.
And of course there were a few people offended, and I heard about it. And we have tried to get some action taken against them, but unfortunately nothing that was done was illegal. So I called Vincent today and talked to him, and Vincent actually had the audacity to tell me, "Hey, look, I don't even want to talk about it." And he kept cutting me off. And I said, "Look, buddy, your guy did something that was grossly, grossly out of line. Are you a supporter of fascism?" And he just, I mean, he was really arrogant. He was a butthole. And then he said that the man finally apologized on the air, which I understand he has not. You know, people that listen to the station have told me he never has. So Vincent lied right there from all I am aware of. And then I asked him, "How is things going with Katrina?" And he really didn't want to answer anything. And I said, "Look, I would like to know how things are going down there. Would you please be kind enough to tell me?" And he said, "Well, sir, they're going great. They're going better than they are in New Orleans. We don't have near the problems New Orleans has." And I looked at him and said, "Sir," I addressed him and said, "Sir, you are a damn liar." And he said, "How do you know?" I said, "Because I live here." I live in Columbia, Mississippi. I have family on the Mississippi coast, and I'll report for unreportednews.net. And I assure you, sir, you are lying. And he yelled at me and I hung up on him. But I would like everybody who will to please go by the WLOX television website.
Okay.
Get their phone numbers. Give this man a call and let him know that you don't think his racism is funny.
Okay, so let's back up and go over the salient details again, Sarge. The guy who delivered the National Socialist salute, his name again is?
I don't have it in front of me, but it will be on my website later on this evening.
Unreportednews.net.
Right. I've got the stories in a package that was sent to me, and I haven't opened it up and put it on the site yet, but...
Okay, so once you get the basic details together so that people, you know, because if people are going to complain, they have to sound like they actually, you know,
right,
know what they're talking about.
This guy, I don't remember his name, but the co-host is Rhonda.
Rhonda.
His name is Rhonda. And,
Rhonda who giggled.
Yeah. And Dave Vincent, unfortunately, he's got all the power on this station. And now this is the same station that when I found out, they reported that HUD had kicked people, had sent letters out telling people they were going to have to get out of their apartments, HUD apartments in Gulfport and Pascagoula. And I called and asked them what they were doing about it, and they said, sir, there's nothing can be done about it. Nobody can do anything. Well, I said, I don't buy that. I'm going to see what I can do. And I called and found out that, in fact, those orders did not come from HUD. They actually originated in Governor Haley Barbour's office.
Oh!
And I got it reversed, and the people were not evicted, as was trying to be done. But it turned out the governor had a buyer for that property.
A buyer.
And so that is the story of what happened. And Mr. Vincent didn't even have the decency after I gave WLOX the story to air it.
Well, they're probably, not to tell you what to do or anything, Sarge, but we need to find out who owns WLOX.
Okay, I'll do that.
Because that'll tell you a little bit more about why they feel like they need to be a house organ for Mississippi Republican profiteering.
Well, you know, Bob, you and Malloy, you guys, y'all advise me. I listen to you because I trust you guys. Y'all.
And what's more, you know, they've got a file that's supposed to be available for public examination. More than calling that station, once you get the particulars, I mean, if it's, I don't ever want to be, Sarge, as sleazy as the right wing is, but by God, I believe in fighting fire with fire. Mm-hmm. Okay? There are organizations out there, one of which I can't remember the actual name of the organization, I apologize, but it's run by just this evil, festering, syphilitic sore on the posterior of the American body politic, and his name is L. Brent Bozell III. And he has people write in, and the American Family Association does the same thing. People write in and complain to the FCC about broadcasts that they've never even seen.
Yeah, well, I think that's something we need to start doing.
And the fact of the matter is, there is a public file of correspondence, and it is supposed to be kept available for public viewing by an individual station, and it is supposed to be used in determinations of whether to re-up a broadcast license.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this station is tolerating a guy who jumps up, clicks his heels, and delivers the Sieg Heil, then that needs to be in their file more than, you know, because there's among other things, you know, there are receptionists and people who are not responsible for that stuff, who shouldn't be held accountable for it.
I have got the documentation, so I'll be glad to send it along to you.
Yeah, do that, and people that way can people can write and put letters in the files of WLOX.
Okay.
That will be subject to review by the FCC.
Well, good, because I am upset because Let me tell you, as hard, and you know this, I don't have to tell you, I'm preaching to the choir telling you this, but as hard as Jim Yancey and his group is working down there, and when you have money that you're supposed to get 4 months ago that has been guaranteed you and you still to this day have not got it because the governor is holding the money back, how can this lowlife, Dave Vincent, tell me that things were going good? And he even had the audacity to ask me, sir, where do you live? And I told him. And he said, well, have you been down here? I said, yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I have. He said, well, obviously you didn't go to the right places.
Yeah, because you only go to the right places. You don't want to see the bad things.
Yes. And it's, I am so upset with this guy because this is the station that most of the area listens to, and this is the one that gets the news out to the people in the coastal area, and now it's not much getting out to the
right
people.
Or what passes with them for news.
Yes, and this has got to, I mean, this isn't fair to the people, and this is killing more people. This is actually sticking knives in these people's hearts and destroying these people's lives. And Dave Vincent, he needs to resign. He needs to get out because he is a murderer. I'm sorry. Got mad.
No, that's okay. That's quite all right.
I can't stand it because I know how hard.
Well, Sarge. Let's you work hard, and you pour your heart out on this stuff. Let's get some people banded together and let's get you some help. Let's get you some people marching shoulder to shoulder with you.
I appreciate it. And by the way, I'm going to hang up, but before I do, let me tell you that I talked to Jeff Ferris today, and apparently he's going to be filling in for Malloy tonight, and he told me he is going to play Billy's song tonight in its entirety.
Good. That's very cool.
And he had Jim on for a solid hour on his show. And
good.
He held it questions, and you should have heard it. It was great. So let's give Jeff a little support. The man has earned it.
Well, absolutely. And, our good friend Bruce Birch is taking a week off because he's starting a new job. And as a consequence tonight, maybe folks could tune in.
I sure hope so. And thank you, Bob. I told this on the Malloy show, so I'm going to say it on your show as well. But thanks to people like you and Mike Malloy and Agnes and Kathy, because you people are the ones that's really making the difference down here. It's not these right-wing thugs. It is actually the liberal voices. And please, let's keep Jim in our minds. And if you got a few extra bucks, please throw it to Jim, because he really is doing something.
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
thank
he
you,
is.
Bob.
Thank you, Sarge. You take care now, all right? I don't know. Do you know the ins and outs of FCC stuff? Do you know that FCC licenses are renewed from time to time? That they renew on a regular schedule, and license holders have to jump through hoops. I want to get the rest of the details on this from Sarge. I wonder how Abraham Foxman over at the Anti-Defamation League would like to know about a guy who stands up, clicks his heels, and delivers the salute. I saw some of this happen. All right, I'm an internet nerd. I am. And during the last week, I told you the great foo-frah over whether West Virginia University was going to lose its head football coach. I had conversations with some Alabama fans. And I made a point that Alabama fetishizes its athletic programs as a cover for its incredibly agonized history. And was repeatedly told, well, things were bad 40 years ago, but they're not like that anymore. You know what? It's the people who say, oh, it's not like that anymore, that make the problems worse and worse and worse. Because it is the denial that allows this kind of stuff to take root. Oh, we're talking about roots. Yeah, you want to talk about your weeds? The Klan, anti-Semitism, You know, those aren't that ain't dandelion and crabgrass. That's the poison. You know, that's Star Trek poison weed stuff. But yeah, you can once we get the information and you can take action on it, you can place letters in the WLOX file that will be subject to review by the FCC at relicensure time. You know, think about it. How many different stations paid how many in total? How many millions of dollars for Janet Jackson's breast that had a pasty over the nipple? Thank God this is the internet. I can say nipple. I mean, it wasn't even a flagrant breast. Mammaria in flagrante delecto. Made that one up on the fly. But you see what I'm saying? That was just a picture of a piece of human anatomy. On the other hand, a guy stands up and delivers. Oh my God! That's worthy of your activism. At least I think it is. Let's go to the phones. Back to the phones. Our good friend Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I
want to stop the show early and go take a shower.
Can't say this. I blame you.
I want to scrub with, like, lava soap.
Well, here's something to maybe take the bad taste out of your mouth. It's a Yahoo News report. Democratic Representative Dennis Kucinich has announced that he will be declaring his candidacy for the presidency of the United States in 2008 on Tuesday at Cleveland City Hall. Yes.
Good.
Very cool.
Yes.
And now that he's married, maybe we can get a little attention paid to him besides that. And he's a bachelor, and he's running for president. Isn't that funny? Oh, dang, that's funny.
Well, I think part of his big problem is that, let's face it, he's not pretty. He looks like a nerd. The fact that he's a brain is minor detail. But that brain is what would make him a really, really great president.
Yeah, it is. And we're pretty doggone busy around here. But we will get involved, and we will support Dennis Kucinich for president.
You and me both. I mean, I'm just frantically turning handsprings in the chair. And as for that expletive deleted, I just hope to God that we didn't get any newbies tuning in the first time expecting liberal talk. We probably gave more attack.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't, Susan. I won't make any bones about how we go about doing this program. There's nothing secret about it.
Oh, I understand.
For me, it's very, very important to be, you know, straight up candid, straight up all the way across the board. And I thought about, you know, I thought about going a little over the top and saying, you know, I think the Mexicans ought to be shot on sight. But I couldn't make it come out of my mouth.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't. If the man felt like he was on unfriendly turf, that he would be defensive. I wanted him to have the opportunity to show himself to be the bigot that he is.
Oh yeah, and he did that in spades. You want to hear something that will just shock his belly?
Okay.
The person who could very easily say something like "shoot them on sight" and did on quite a few occasions was my father.
Hmm.
In fact, his racism was so bad at one point, I told him at the time he either cleaned up his act or he would not be seeing his at the time, only grandchild ever. Because it was just really, really bad.
And that's, you know, that's stuff from another generation, and we keep trying to leave it behind and leave it behind and leave it behind. But
of course he did have a really interesting way to cut the federal budget.
What was that?
Line up all federal employees, including Congress, and shoot every other one.
Did you ever check his wallet for the John Birch Society membership card, Susan?
actually, he wasn't a member, but he was a wannabe.
Mm.
Yeah, he thought Barry Goldwater was great. He thought Ronnie Reagan was wonderful. I was sitting there saying, God help this country. And he was, you know, we used to have heroic fights.
Oh, yeah, and there's a city on a hill.
Oh, yeah. The whole nine yards. And we used to, you know.
It's Bush morning in America.
Never lived to see Bush. I don't, oh, God. Bush would have disillusioned him beyond belief. But this judge, I don't know which is worse, his racism or his genocidal impulses, because, you know, the stamping out, you know, by the God figure, if that's not an allegory for genocide, I don't know what is.
It's exactly what it is. Yeah, well, these, you know, he doesn't come right out and say that yeah, what, you're going to buy the book? I'm going to ruin it for you. You know, eventually, the master of the hothouse returned to his indoor garden. He was greatly disappointed with what he saw. Orchid, red rose, yellow rose, he called out. Why have you let your soil and your water and your food be taken by these weeds? But the flowers of the hothouse were all too weak to tell him, so the master set about removing the dandelions from the hothouse. And he gave his flowers new soil and new water and more food. This thing is wrong on so many levels. You know, the water and the food. You know, why have you, the immigrants are the ones who are ruining the soil and the water and the air? Damn, I thought it was Massey Energy.
Yeah, now, it's like I told Agnes, this guy is the type of person who would put smallpox contaminated clothing, rub it all over blankets, and then give it to the Native Americans. He's that type of person. And if you check with an herbal, dandelions are incredibly useful plants. You can eat them. You can use them as medicinals.
Well, yeah. See, that's yeah. You're absolutely right, Susan. Because and this tells me, you know, this is one of the beauties of being. Of having grown up at least a little bit country, I've had me no small amount of pots of dandelion greens, and they're good.
Yeah.
They're yummy. A little bit of hot sauce, or cooked up with a ham hock, or a little bit of bacon, some pot liquor and cornbread. They are good, just like poke salad greens are good.
Yeah, and do you know what a rose is good for? Especially if it's a hybrid tea.
What's that?
It looks pretty for a while. It smells pretty. And that's it. And within, about 10 years, it's dead. Because it's a hybrid. It's grafted. It cannot live on its own.
Right. It can't live in nature.
No, it can't. I ought to know. I grow roses. I've got 200 of them in my yard.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Got any yellow ones?
Yep.
You will never look at, Susan, you will never look at that yellow rose the same way again.
Yeah, I like purple ones.
Yeah, I like those that are kind of orangish, pinky, you know.
Oh, you like the bicolors and the tricolors. Oh, I got a rose.
Yeah, they probably last, 4 years?
Well, they're about, the grafted hybrid teas run about 10 years. And then they just die out off the rootstock.
Yep.
I have two rose bushes. They're called China roses. They're old root roses, meaning they were discovered in the 1800s. There are specimens of those roses 200 and 300 years old because they're old root, their own root.
Well, it's not quite as charming as that probably is. But here in West Virginia, we have a problem with something called a multiflora rose. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah.
It grows in the West on level ground, and they called it the living fence row.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was brought to West Virginia and planted here by the West Virginia Department of Agriculture in the 50s as an experiment, and it went nuts. And, I mean, you can't get through that stuff. It'll take the skin off of your hide, and you can dig it up. It comes back. You can pour gasoline on it and burn it. It comes back. It's almost unkillable.
No, there is a way to kill it. Take Roundup, mix soap in the Roundup, and spray that.
Yeah, and make it stick. Yeah.
And then it is thick when it's growing, and then everything goes to the roots and it kills it. Oregon has the same thing, only it's called Scotch broom.
Okay.
The Scots brought Scotch broom with them, which in Scotland is a very pretty plant, very useful, and under control. It went bananas here.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I've seen, it's the same thing that the South deals with in terms of kudzu. We have it in terms of multiflora rose. You've got the Scotch broom out there. You know, all misguided. And but this, you know, and it all turns around and comes back. This facile analogy that some people on this earth are not as good as others.
Yeah, basically it all results from man trying to tinker with his environment and screwing it up.
And screwing with other human beings as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I suppose, well, you know, those hothouse flowers are also a product of inbreeding, aren't they?
Oh, inbreeding like you would not believe. They're the worst yet. They're the product of what's known as line breeding.
Which is it, right?
Which is you breed one progeny back to its parent umpty-ump generations.
Is that the same thing that has resulted in the thoroughbred horse?
Basically, yeah, and a thoroughbred horse can't reproduce itself because it can't birth itself.
Amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, I really like the Indian proverb, leave the land the way you found it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, the white man has ignored that totally.
Oh, sure, because, you know, and among other things, it has to do with the dominionist streak that goes way back into European religion that says, you know, that humankind is to have, and by humankind we mean white humankind,
yes,
is to have dominion over the earth and to use it and abuse it, because day after tomorrow, Jesus is going to come back in some holy roles, and it's not going to matter anymore.
I noticed in this hothouse flowers, I got the impression that the weeds would have been fine if they were only white.
Well, yeah. If they were only us.
If you have white illegal immigrants, that's different.
You know, there once was a group of beautiful flowers of all sizes and all shapes and all colors who lived in a beautiful hothouse. The master of this hothouse gave to these flowers only the finest soil in which to rest their roots, and fed them only the best food, and watered them at least once a day with pure, clean, clear water. And they grew, and they flourished, and they were happy, and it showed. Yeah, right. You know, where are the Indian flowers in the hothouse, Susan?
They ain't there. I don't hear see anything about the Indian paintbrush at all.
Outside the hothouse, flowers also grew. But the roots of these flowers had to share the soil with rocks, and these flowers had to find food whenever they could, and these flowers were only watered when it rained, and these flowers did not grow as large as the ones in the hothouse, and they were not as healthy, and they were not as happy, and it showed. That's right, they're going to bring disease into the hothouse! Oops, sorry.
Has this Yahoo ever heard of a sequoia?
Nah.
Pardon me. He kicked me off.
You know, I mean, I'm not gooning on any of our New York listeners, but he doesn't. He's from Brooklyn and he works in the Bronx. I'm guessing he sees one tree on the way to work.
Oh, you mean that tree that grew in Brooklyn?
See, yeah. You work with me. See, that's nice. That's where I was going. You know, a tree. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I read that book when I was a kid. Let's face it, Brooklyn is really short on trees. New York is short on trees unless they're in planters. What is that? Yeah, Bible gets you can. This guy's got a black thumb. I would be willing to bet.
Can't grow a chia pet. Susan, thanks so much.
I'm gonna let you go.
Have a good Monday.
You too.
Bye now.
Good night, Mr. Kiss.
Will do.
Bye-bye.
Oh, chia pets. for right-wingers. Yeah, they're weeds, and the seeds get scattered to the floor where they die. Because the dandelions are after you. All right, we're at the end of our first hour. You want to get in? You want to get in the sandbox and play? Come on along. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. My head is still spinning. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Missouri, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan gave a farewell address today at the Truman Presidential Library. He warned the U.S. not to give up democratic ideals while fighting the war on terrorism. Annan urged America to use diplomacy and work with other nations of the world. In Iraq, the country's president has rejected the Iraq Study Group report. He says its recommendations are an insult and dangerous to the country's sovereignty and constitution. He also says UN training of Iraq's army and police has gone from failure to failure. In the western Anbar province today, a U.S. Marine helicopter made a hard landing during a routine flight, injuring 18 of 21 aboard. This was the third U.S. military aircraft in 2 weeks to go down with mechanical problems in the region. In Baghdad today, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed, 3 wounded by roadside bombs. That brings the American death toll in December to at least 46. Also in Baghdad today, at least 51 Iraqis were killed in sectarian violence, 78 died over the weekend. In New York, a trespassing conviction for peace activist Cindy Sheehan and 3 other women. The women were arrested in March, attempting to deliver an anti-war petition to the U.S. mission to the UN. In Gaza City today, 3 children and an adult were killed in what is being called a botched assassination attempt. The children were the young sons of a senior Palestinian intelligence officer for the Fatah Party. In Chile, demonstrations today following the death yesterday of 91-year-old former dictator Augusto Pinochet. The general died before facing war crimes trials for the thousands he ordered brutally murdered. In Beijing, international talks on North Korea's nuclear program resume on December 18th. South Korea is welcoming the news and says it expects substantial progress at the negotiations. In Oregon, a federal judge today announced the settlement of a lawsuit brought by 150 people against the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Portland. The plaintiffs claimed that they had been sexually abused by priests. The dollar amount of the settlement was not disclosed. In Ohio, Democratic Congressman Dennis Kucinich announced he would run again for president. The liberal anti-war congressman said he will run because his party is not pushing hard enough to end the Iraq war. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. it'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In Cedar Falls, Iowa, E. coli sickened nearly three dozen people. 14 were hospitalized after they ate from a Taco John's restaurant, which is not part of the Taco Bell chain. The Space Shuttle Discovery docked with the International Space Station today about an hour ago. The crew now begins replacing the station's electrical system. Chemical maker DuPont announced a $100 million cost-saving move. 1,500 people will lose their jobs. Daimler Chrysler says it may lay off 4,000 of its North American workers next year. The company says the demand for trucks has diminished. The J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles will return a 4th century B.C. wreath to Greece. Greek cultural officials allege the gold wreath was illegally moved from their country. California is about to take the title as the nation's top cheese producer from Wisconsin. According to the Department of Agriculture, last year California produced 2.1 billion pounds of cheese. Wisconsin produced 2.4 billion pounds. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.22 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 21 points at 12,328. The Nasdaq up 5 at 2442. The S&P 500 up 3 at 1413. And gold ended trading at $634.50 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's do another hour. Got a great email from our buddy Billy Shears, who was responsible, by the way, for... the music there. And Billy says, damn, Bob, you let your guest go too soon. I was going to call in and tell him with all that weed comes into the United States of America, all those hippie pinko liberals will be elated because they'll just be smoking it all up. Your loyal right-wing listener. You know, I did that for what, 20 minutes? And everybody who heard it just feels all icky now. It's amazing. It is simply amazing. But I don't know. You gotta let these people. Yeah, Agnes is doing the kitty cat thing with the little paws and you know, hairball. But it's so disturbing, you know, from the yellow rose to what eventually happens to the dandelion. The next spring, the dandelion outside the hothouse again sent her seeds high into the air and in through the vent. My God, the illegal immigrants are going to parachute in on us. And in through the vent on the roof of the hothouse to land in the soil of the flowers within. But this time the hothouse flowers were ready for the newcomers and used their roots and stems to push the dandelion seeds to the floor where they could not grow. Where they died! You know, I heard somewhere the other day about the... It was in Arizona. I know we've got some Arizona listeners. Last year, Arizona passed a stiff new criminal law that would punish the people who were referred to as coyotl, the coyotes. And these people, of course, are traffickers in human beings who take money to transport people across into the United States so that they can go and scrub toilets and do things like that. And the law was designed to punish these people because people frequently die in these human trafficking situations. And there are prosecutors in Arizona who have taken the coyote statute and used it against individual immigrants. And they argue in front of juries that the immigrants who are charged are guilty of being coyotes because they, wait for it, you're gonna love this, they self-smuggle. They're coyotes because they smuggle themselves, and therefore, and one brave judge down there threw a case out this past week and looked at the prosecutor and said, "You're out of your mind. You have no." Well, that's that. They don't really say that. They say your legal argument has no merits and no good faith grounds for its extension, and that's judge speak for you, crazy man. But I remember being back in law school, and there was an old gag about what do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 40? Your Honor. And we also heard of court, also in the interim heard from our good friend Scotty, who wrote in and said, "What skill you have, Bob. Only you could have illuminated such an artificial, superficial, judicial official with hints of superstition all in 10 minutes. But are your tippy toes sore?" I don't know if I can ever do that again. I've threatened to do 3 hours of fake right-wing radio, but I think the rocket vomiting would kick in at some point. Because I can't imagine how these people get from one day to the next living on nothing but fear and hate. And, you know, hate in general, I try not to have any room for in my existence. But the fear. And if you're going to be fearful, at least fear the right thing. Rosa, who scrubs toilets, is not threatening your way of life. The Bush family is threatening your way of life. The failure of the United States to try to deal in some meaningful fashion with an energy policy that says that's no different from that of a heroin junkie, that's threatening our way of life. You know, the religion industry that goes out there and shoves 5,000-year-old mythology down people's throats as fact, they're a threat to our way of life. And they are something to be afraid of. You know, it was mentioned in the past few days, or back before the weekend, that Walmart is apparently going to start marketing, selling this Left Behind Extreme Forces, is that what the name of it is? Left Behind Extreme Forces, something like that. They're going to start marketing this to teenagers and good Christian mommies and daddies who can, well, you know, at least that's a godly game, and at least Junior won't be playing Grand Theft Auto Vice City. No. Junior's going to be sitting there in the blue light from the monitor, blowing away the homos. Well, that's okay, because, you know, in the third book, in the third chapter of Leviathaniticus, it says that a man shall not lie down with a man, and he shall be an abomination and shall be stoned! It boggles the mind. The Republic is under threat. But we all know where the threat comes from. It doesn't come from Muslim terrorists 10,000 miles away. The real threat to America is within America. The real threat to America comes from, against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We've got domestic enemies right now. The people, you know, the people who go out and blithely vote for George Bush and these other Republican freaks, who then go in out and in their name murder 750,000 people. Nations don't easily get over that kind of stuff. You can make an argument that everything that bad that happens in the United States is an outgrowth of some of the rotten things that we have done catching up with us. Oh, and me, by the way, over the last few nights, I've been talking about, you know, things, little bumper sticker ideas, things that end in now, like out of Iraq now. Well, there's a new function you can join in on at the headonradionetwork.com website called the Now List. And you can go in there and you can come up we can come up with the list of things that must start happening now. You know, and we started with out of Iraq now. And that's one of the reasons that Denis Kucinich is going to announce his presidential bid tomorrow. You know, I'd like to see him have $1 jillion to pour into a campaign. Because, you know, again, it'll be scrounging and scrabbling for money. And we'll give it. We'll give it a buck at a time, $5 at a time. You know, some of us might have 10 or 20 or even 100 to give to Congressman Kucinich. And we'll give of our time and our energies and our hearts. And we will do so in an effort to save this once great nation. You know, he says very clearly that he's going to enter the fray for the simple reason that the Democratic Party is not taking seriously enough the need to end the war now. Consider the difference between ending the war now and ending the war later lies only in the number of people who will have to die for the choice of later. Whew. That's a real hair curler, isn't it? Andrew is on the line. Andrew, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm getting along, I reckon.
I haven't talked to you in a while.
It's been a while. You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Can't complain, you know. I've been having a double time with the stream, but I've been checking out some other guys and stuff like that and, you know, staying informed.
Good.
But I just wanted to call up. Yeah, we need to get out of Iraq now. And getting out of Iraq, I mean, you do it now or you do it later. And the only variable in there is, like you said, how many more dead bodies? I think the only option is to get out of Iraq and try to help the Iraqis rebuild their country. But that wasn't why I called. I called because you heard the ports bill was all settled today, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I would like to see the Democrats jump on that when they review the transaction. But I would like them to see them. I wanted to ask you, what would you think about putting in some type of legislation stating that the ports cannot be traded from that entity to another via a merger, or could not be sold for at least 5 to 10 years? I mean, the ports need a lot of work.
They need a lot of work, and they need stability in order for that work to take place.
Exactly, and we need an accountability trail, just in case, in case something ever did happen. You don't want that flip-flopping hands, you know, every couple of years or what have you.
Well, I think we could even go a little bit further, Andrew, and say that any contemplated sale of the ports, that in the case that the sale was not approved, that the ports would revert
mm-hmm.
to the ownership of the outright of the United States of America.
That sounds excellent.
Because I still don't understand why the United States, you know, but this is what you get
yeah.
out of a bunch of people who believe that government has no business that doing governmental stuff.
Everything. Even in this war on terror, they still want to privatize the ports, and that's their philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the amazing things, Andrew. We talk about out of Iraq now. If we pull out every American soldier right now, that still leaves an army of something like 50,000 mercenaries on the ground in Iraq.
Exactly. Yeah, we forgot about all the private contractor side, the privatized side of the war in Iraq. And, you know, the big money that they're making on the taxpayers' dime. But, yeah, you got a point there. I guess they'll man that big embassy over there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one with the car dealerships and the
yeah, I got a feeling that big embassy is really going to come to naught in the long view of things.
Well, didn't they say it was almost completed?
Yeah, they did. But
what the heck? What are they going to use it for? Well, maybe we can make it one big giant triage area. I guess I don't know.
Well, it's going to be Fortress USA in Iraq. it's going to be uh, this is In the long view of history, Andrew, if you go back and you look at the Crusades, you'll find that, let's see, there was one called Crac de Chevalier, this huge castle compound, and the Templars and the Knights of St. John and so forth built them all over the Middle East.
Yeah, all their castles, right? That'll be our castle. That'll be our albatross.
Right, and they built them to be siege-proof.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently was the thinking in the building of this monstrosity as well.
Oh my goodness!
Well, I don't want to run off down.
We did collect them all. Put all the neocons right in that base, and
yeah.
We know where they're at, and let the Iraqis guard them.
Hey, that sounds like a lovely idea,
doesn't it?
Let me ask you. I don't mean to be too technical. You say you've been having trouble with the stream?
Yeah, it's just been clipping in and out and buffering a lot. I mean, I've used PhonoStar, I used a bunch of things, and it's not just Head On Radio Network. It's anything. Some days are better than others, but it seems around 5 p.m. it starts clipping.
Mm.
I don't know if Agent Fred has anything to do with that or what, but
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, frankly.
Yeah, whatever. It's okay.
But we like to keep up with that kind of stuff because.
Yeah.
But
it's not just you.
Okay.
It's other stations I listen to also.
Okay.
So.
But you're getting through the holiday season okay, and
yeah, everything's fine here. Just had a roof put on. So of course money's tight now, but hey, what are you gonna do, right?
Oh man,
have a roof over your head.
Yeah, I've done roofing and
that's tough work.
Yeah, I'd rather take a beating.
Yeah. But I paid somebody to do it. I didn't do it myself. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why I'm broke.
Right, broker than you. Yeah. But your bank account's broke instead of your back, so
exactly.
You're probably ahead of the game.
Yes, exactly. We'll make more. But
love the attitude.
Yes, gotta stay with that attitude. But that's all I wanted to call up.
All right. Well, thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
Happy holidays. I almost said Merry Christmas. I will not say Merry Christmas. No, I won't. But, I'm glad Andrew brought up the Dubai ports thing. We thought it went away, didn't we? No, it didn't. Oh, great line on Dear Leader today. An article from the New York Daily News. Headline, Poor Bush Had a Week That Reeked. And it says, this is what grabbed me. For good measure, a new poll found only, 27% of Americans approve of Bush's Iraq policy. And a so-called moderate GOP Senator Gordon Smith, we talked about him last week on the program from Oregon, said that the Iraq policy is absurd and possibly criminal. Well, that's when what is called in the article a well-placed Bush source who talks with the president often said, he'll be fine, but he can't be doing very good. It's been a terrible year, and it keeps getting worse. Reading again directly from the article, yet Bush is described by another recent visitor as still resolutely defiant, convinced history will ultimately vindicate him. This is the quote that convinced the writer that he believes history will ultimately vindicate him. I'll be dead when they get it right, he said during an Oval Office meeting last week about Iraq. Yeah, I'll be dead when they get it right. Now, see, if I was a real smartass, I'd say something like, I hope they get it right day after tomorrow. But I won't do that, because I'm not that kind of guy. Another Bush confidant, however, says the president reluctantly understands an Iraq course correction is mandatory. He is determined not to let Iraq go up in smoke and start a slaughter. Yeah, this is a hell of a time to start worrying about starting a slaughter when 650,000-plus innocent Iraqi men, women, and children are already dead. The only way that people can get away with issuing quotes like that about George Bush is by virtue of the fact that the American people are achingly uninformed about the truth on the ground in Iraq. Yeah, I know, the right-wingers. Why won't they tell the good things about Iraq? Because there aren't any. You can build the soccer field. You can build the schools. You can rebuild a mosque or two. But you can't get power to them. You can't make the toilets flush. And you can't feed the people inside them. The Iraqi oil that was going to pay for the war that's now cost us something on the order of half a trillion dollars, they can't get that flowing either, because it keeps getting blown up, because we can't secure it. Meanwhile, John McCain still thinks it would be a lovely idea to... By the way, the word the McCainies are using to describe what they want to do in Iraq, it's called a surge. We're going to surge and add 20... You know, they want to add 20,000 troops with a surge. Jesus. Who are these people? I mean, do you ever... Yeah, some of you run across them. I don't get them. I didn't approve of the way he ran his presidential campaign, but back in 1972 or 74 or whatever it was, when John Kerry asked, how do you ask a man to be the last one to die for a mistake? He nailed the dismount. And it's time to start asking that question again. It is time to get serious about asking those questions again. We could get out now, and the death toll of Americans, mind you, in Iraq will be around 3,000, and the grievously injured 20, 25, 30,000. Or we can follow the half a loaf Baker Commission recommendations and get out sometime in 2008 when the death toll is 3,500. 4,000. Perhaps by then we've had our own little Dien Bien Phu besieged inside the Green Zone in Baghdad. Remember, troops were being pulled from Al-Anbar province into Baghdad. Nothing like concentrating troops to set yourself up for a real Jim Dandy siege. And as a consequence of all of that, more people in the 2008 scenario will die. And so it's a simple matter of subtraction, isn't it? The number of dead now versus the number of dead then, and the difference between the two lies squarely on the hands of the people who said things like, well, we can't just cut and run. We can't just pull out. We've got to have a phased redeployment. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe between now and whenever that we do pull out, the death notices that come from the government to American service members' families should... What do we put on there? Died for a phased redeployment? Died so we could pull out in 2008 instead of now? Already, we have to deal on a moral basis with the fact that there are nigh unto 3,000 American servicemen and women who died for no good reason at all. And many, many, many service families understand this, and it keeps... My God, I can't imagine how they live from one day to the next. But that is already where we are. And we're going to take it to a new place where... What? Where people die because we haven't figured out yet that it doesn't get any better? I mean, that's... I would love to be privy to a conversation that the president has in the Oval Office about what it is that's going to get better between now and whenever. Is Maliki going to become a better prime minister? Is Jalal Talabani going to become a better president? Oh, by the way, they're getting ready to, Maliki's going to jump or be pushed. We have not yet decided whether he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape. What's gonna be the benchmark? We're talking about benchmarks, and there's a new blabbing point. We're looking for a new way forward. That means that you've driven into the brick wall so many times that you finally backed up and started driving down the brick wall to drive into it in a different place. We're looking for a new way forward. There is no forward. The only way forward is deeper into the quicksand. And I've got a little audio. Maybe we'll play some of it later. Rummy snuck off to Iraq over the weekend. Did you catch that? His farewell tour. And yeah, in case you were wondering, he's still crazier than a sprayed roach. And it turns out that Bob Gates was, blackberrying with his students back at Texas A&M during his confirmation hearings? Did you run across that one? Holy... Is it too much... Do we just have to give these people a great big honking load of... Ritalin or something to keep them focused? You're in your confirmation hearing and you're blackberrying with your... Oh, God... I want to take a break, Agnes. I'm going to take a break. Jump in for the conversation if you want to. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid.
I don't want to get up early and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweats. Great prices? No sweats. Great looks? No sweats. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Before the hour, we're halfway through this Monday edition of Head On. I'm Bob. By the way, I was contacted over the weekend with a question. Hey, Bob, would you like to have Cindy Sheehan on the program? And we were actually talking about making it happen, and it was a sincere offer. Ah, couldn't happen. Why? Well, because Cindy had to be made an example of. She was convicted today of trespassing. You know, this could have been just paid for and dealt with in a ticket. But, of course, she refused to pay, and she had to be tried. And rather than simply dismiss the charges, which would have been the appropriate thing to do, the legal community decided to have a nice little trial. She was accused, again, of trespassing because she tried to deliver an anti-Iraq war petition to the U.S. mission, to the United Nations, and then she refused to leave. They were sentenced to conditional discharge. That means that they could, Cindy and her comrades could go to jail or face some other penalty if they're arrested in the next 6 months. They all got handed $95 court cost surcharges. It was Global Exchange, the organization, along with Sheehan, who last March tried to take a petition with 72,000 signatures to the U.S. mission's headquarters across the street from the UN. And the police ordered them to disperse, and they were arrested when they didn't. I know that the Cindy Sheehan has been called every filthy thing under the sun by the right wing, but she manifests more courage than just about any, well, than any, no, just about, than any wingnut Republican out there. And by the way, just a couple of other notes. You know, I mentioned the Now list at headonradionetwork.com that you can avail yourself of. I was pleased to see that Bob Herbert from the New York Times today, nah, I guess Bob's probably not listening, but he is catching on. The title of the column is The Time Is Now. He writes, on Wednesday, as if the release of the Iraq Study Group report needed some form of dramatic punctuation, 11 more American GIs were killed in this misbegotten war that just about everyone except perhaps the president now sees as a complete and utter debacle. Senator Gordon Smith, a Republican from Oregon who supported the war, delivered an emotional speech on the Senate floor Thursday evening in which he said, quote, I, for one, am at the end of my rope when it comes to supporting a policy that has our soldiers patrolling the same streets in the same way, being blown up by the same bombs day after day. That is absurd. It may even be criminal. I cannot support that anymore. Herbert writes, if the U.S. is ultimately going to retreat in Iraq, then Gordon Smith replied, I would rather do it sooner than later. I am looking for answers, but the current course is unacceptable to this senator. The primary value of the Baker-Hamilton report is that it embodies in clear and explicit language the consensus that has emerged in the U.S. about the current state of the war. It's not so much a blueprint for action as a recognition of reality, Herbert says. The level of violence is high and growing. There is great suffering, and the daily lives of many Iraqis show little or no improvement. Pessimism is pervasive, according to the report. With the situation in Iraq deteriorating and support for the war in the U.S. having all but collapsed, the only real question on the table is how long the U.S. is going to drag out its inevitable pullout of combat forces, and the inevitable moral question that is inextricably linked to that slowly evolving set of circumstances is how to justify the lives that will be lost between now and the final day of our departure. Dang, I feel pretty smart now. I said that a long time before Bob Herbert ever got around to it. I'm not gooning on Bob Herbert. I'm glad this kind of thing is finally showing up on the pages of the New York Times. I still hold the New York Times in profound contempt, but this is more the news staff than the editorial staff. I still hold the New York Times in contempt for Judy Miller's stenography of every little thing that came out of the Bush White House. Oh, Jesus, they got aluminum tubes, tubes, tubes! Little did we know that the aluminum tubes were actually for the Iraqi internet. Just ask Ted Stevens. It's a series of tubes. But I am glad to see that simple, elegant ideas can take root in more than one place. We're probably dandelion seeds, me and Bob Herbert. Americans, including the members of the study group, continue to insist that the key to an American withdrawal over the next couple of years is the improvement of Iraqi security forces to the point where they can successfully step into the breach. That is complete fantasy, as a reading of the study group's own assessment of the Iraqi forces will attest. The study group found that, among other things, the Iraqi army units lack leadership, lack equipment, lack personnel, and lack logistics and support. Quote, soldiers are given leave liberally and face no penalties for absence without leave. Unit readiness rates are low, often at 50% or less. They lack the ability to sustain their operation, the capability to transport supplies and troops, and the capacity to provide their own indirect fire support, close air support, technical intelligence, and medical evacuation. Herbert notes, other than that, they're fine. He ends by saying it is time to pull the troops out of harm's way. He says there is something agonizingly tragic about soldiers dying in a war that has already been lost. We don't like the notion of that, though, do we? Maybe the idea that we've lost it. At what point in time are the American people allowed to hear the fact, and for God's sakes, please don't blame the troops on the ground for this. You can blame Richard Myers, that doofus in the blue suit. You can blame John Abizade, doofus in green suit. There's plenty of blame to go around for the general staff. God knows there's plenty of blame to go around for Rummy and Condi and Pearl and Wolfowitz and the rest of those the punk-ass thugs. The people on the ground, well, you ever read Alfred Lord Tennyson? Ours is not to question why. Ours is but to do and die. Not their fault. And as loathsome as I find Gordon Smith, he does have it right. I, for one, am at the end of my rope when it comes to supporting a policy that has our soldiers patrolling the same streets in the same way, being blown up by the same bombs day after day. That is absurd, and it may even be criminal. And I cannot support it anymore. So, our elegant little notion, get out now, seems to be getting some traction, but you wonder... You do. You can't help but wonder at what point the American people are allowed to hear that on a large scale. Get out now. God bless you, flying spaghetti monster. Bless you, goddess. Bless you, Dennis Kucinich. Because he will stand up and he will say, get out now. But ultimately, the question I was asking is when the American people will be allowed to understand that the war is lost. Yes, indeed, Lord Jesus, the war is lost. But it hasn't been lost in the last month, and it hasn't been lost in the last quarter or the last 6 months. It wasn't lost in the last year. The war was lost the moment that George Bush decided to start it. Now that's another elegant little idea. I don't know if that will ever get the same traction as Get Out Now is going to get. I have a feeling, though I don't dare speak for him, I have a feeling that Dennis Kucinich would probably agree with that. The war was lost the instant George Bush decided to start it. Because the war itself was so inherently evil, so utterly wrong, so absolutely in violation of every principle of American of the American will and the American psyche, that it had to be a loser from the start. We don't do things like that. The American people, I'll get the emails from the people who did. Yeah, we've started wars like that. Yeah, what about the Mexican War? Yeah. Still paying for that one, aren't we? And we're going to pay and pay and pay for this one. And God only knows what happens to us if we actually find ourselves in a situation where we need to defend ourselves. Because that man at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has just about made it an absolute certainty that we cannot. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bob calls from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you, Bob?
Well, I only got one thing to say to you.
Okay.
You know, I've said it time and time and time again. Stupid is.
Stupid does. Yep.
And that is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a bunch of stupid people. They don't have the brains, Bob. They don't have the capacity to understand other people's suffering. They don't have, you know, like, I'm going to mention another caller's name.
Okay.
Andrew.
Yeah.
That's a man. That's a man I would call friend any day of the week. I would say to him, my friend, you are more than a friend to me. You're family. You are my family. Like you and Agnes are family to me. It's just that simple. If you accept people and understand where they're coming from, then you are human. But these people, these Republicans, Bob, these filthy, House and our Congress, our Senate. These people, these things are not human. There's something wrong with them, Bob. They do not have any capacity for empathy. They cannot feel anyone else's pain. They have no way do they even exist as people. There's something else. So I say to them, goodbye and good riddance. I'm sick of them. And hey, this thing that's happening now between Pelosi and Conyers and you know, these they're becoming something else too. Now we have to stop them and tell Conyers and Pelosi, no way, no how, no, there's just no, absolutely no, Bob. We have to tell them in the sternest way, like you tell your child when the child is playing with matches, don't do it. You'll burn the house down. And they say, well, why? I don't care why. I'm telling you no. And no is a word that they need to learn. The Democrats and the Republicans need to learn the word no, and they need to understand it. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. And my friend, to you and to Agnes, our very best Christmas, holiday, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate.
Sure.
Wishes to you.
Well, thank
and,
you. Thank you,
know,
you, Bob.
Hey, I mean that. I really do.
I know you do. I know you do.
I mean it to all the people of the earth. To you, blessings. But to those that do not care about Christmas, Hanukkah, or the holy days of
Ramadan.
Ramadan. To you, curses. Curses, curses.
Well, you know, it's you remind me of something, Bob, because if you go and you get your King James Bible out, you'll find it where it says, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. You're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Well, that's a mistranslation.
Mm.
I mean, it's a well-known, it's one of the most, it is probably the most well-known mistranslation in the entire book, because what it actually says is, peace on earth to men of goodwill.
Ah.
And
well,
so...
then, to you and I, then it is peace on earth to men of goodwill, because I have goodwill, and I give it willingly, I give it with love, and I give it with peace in my heart to say to my friends on the internet and out there in radio world, love is not against the will of God. It is the will of any God that you can come up with, because love is the answer. I mean, it's like 1960s again, is it not? Love is the answer. If you love one another as I have loved you,
exactly,
then you have a chance. If you love yourself more than you love others, then, well,
you're doomed.
I'm sorry. I can't help you. But Jesus said that, love thee one another as I have loved you. And that's Jesus. Now, you want to go back further in the books and find out how many people said, just love each other. Don't.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly original.
No, it wasn't. No, it.
But, you know, the thing is, these people are so, and this is the kind of proof in the pudding, Bob, that, you know, what did our good friend Bruce Birch refer to him? Al Christa. These Al Christa people, they only thump the Bibles. They don't read them.
Well,
because they don't get it. They don't understand that it's peace on earth to men of goodwill. If you have no goodwill, you're not entitled to peace.
I saw that, Bob. I saw that a long, long time ago. time ago that if you do not extend a hand in friendship, you will draw back a bloody stub. You know, you were talking about the Vietnam War just a little while ago, the Vietnamese War. Okay, we lost, you know, 60,000. No, you know, it was 59,800 and some odd people, you know, that we lost in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard it said that Vietnam didn't start till 1965, but it started in 1960. 1960, okay, is when we first put in advisors, okay?
True.
And it went on till 1975.
Yep.
So, you know, and they were talking about the, you know, Iraq War has gone on for 15 years. Well, yes, it has, because Pappy Bush started it with help from a bunch of other of his cronies. And so, you know, that war has gone on for 15 years, too. It started back in the 1980s, so we're into the 2000s now. When will we stop making war and pound our what is that, beat our swords into plowshares, okay?
Right.
When will we do as the Bible or the Quran or the Torah command us to do? When will we listen to the words that are written down to tell us how to live? Love thee one another. Please. For peace and for tranquility and for love on earth, and maybe our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren can grow up in a better, on a better planet, because we have turned it into crap, Bob. And I am just brokenhearted. And I don't believe there's a man on this earth that's as good as this stuff is kissing my lips right now.
Yeah.
Darius just came in the house. He was outside. He came in, he jumped up on the, he's got his tongue slapping my face. But no, there's not a man on this planet that's as good as that dog. You know, and you know what the name of a dog is spelled backwards?
Yep.
It's God. And you know why God and dog are the same thing? Because there's nothing more faithful, nothing more loving, or nothing more giving than that critter, that God, or that dog that, you know, licks your lips and says, I love you. And Bob, to Andrew, I say to you, my friend, thank you. I've missed you. I've listened for you, and when I hear you, I just think, dang, I'd like to sit down with that young man and have a cup of coffee and maybe work out some problems with this planet. But,
well, yeah. I think we can work out a lot of problems, Bob. If we choose to make our voices heard, if we choose to participate in the process.
I do it because, you know, I jump into here because you guys are, you know, like old Sarge down there in Mississippi, you know. He cares, and I hear his voice, and I know it's in his soul, because I really hear that young boy, that Sarge.
Yeah,
because he was there with me and I was there with him. Maybe we fought in different, you know, different provinces, but hey, yeah, he's one with me, and I love him. If you talk to Sarge, tell him old Bob.
He's listening. I'm sure he hears you, Bob. We got to roll on, brother.
I love you much.
All right, take care,
Agnes. Good health, my dear Agnes. Good health to you. In this season of joy, may we all just transition past self and think about all those young
Thanks,
Bring
Bob.
Them home.
Bring them home now.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Good night. Bye. Yeah. Love you.
Bring them home now. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan gave a farewell address today at the Truman Presidential Library in Independence, Missouri. He warned the U.S. not to give up democratic ideals while fighting the war on terrorism. Annan urged America to make better use of diplomacy. In Iraq, the country's president has rejected the Iraq Study Group report. He says its recommendations are an insult and dangerous to the country's sovereignty and constitution. He also says the U.S. training of Iraq's army and police has gone from failure to failure. In the western Anbar province, a U.S. Marine helicopter made a hard landing today during a routine flight, injuring 18 of 21 aboard. This was the third U.S. military aircraft in 2 weeks to go down with mechanical problems in the region. In Baghdad today, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed, 3 wounded by roadside bombs. Also today, at least 51 Iraqis were killed in sectarian violence, 78 died over the weekend. In New York, a trespassing conviction for peace activist Cindy Sheehan and 3 other women. The women were arrested in March attempting to deliver an anti-war petition to the U.S. mission to the U.N. In Germany, police say they may have found a suspect in the radiation poisoning murder of Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko. Dmitry Kovtun was one of 2 men who had contacted Litvinenko prior to his poisoning. Kovtun, his ex-wife and her partner, and 2 of Kovtun's children have been contaminated. In Chile, demonstrations today following the death yesterday of 91-year-old former dictator Augusto Pinochet. The general died before facing war crimes trials for the thousands he ordered brutally murdered. In Beijing, international talks on North Korea's nuclear program resume on December 18th. South Korea is welcoming the news and says it expects substantial progress at the negotiations. At the UN today, the Russian ambassador expressed optimism a new draft resolution imposing sanctions against Iran could be adopted as soon as Christmas. Iran had been threatened with the European resolution after it refused to abandon its uranium enrichment program. In Ohio, Democratic Congressman Dennis Kucinich announced he would run again for president. The liberal anti-war congressman said he will run because his party is not pushing hard enough to end the Iraq war. In Chicago, Democratic Mayor Richard Daley said today he will run for a 6th term. If he serves another term, he will have been in office longer than his father, who holds the record.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The woman the Guinness Book of Records considers the oldest person in the world died today in a Memphis nursing home. Lizzie Bolden was 116. The skeleton of a baby plesiosaur has been found in Antarctica. The five-foot-long creature is 70 million years old. Scientists say the fossil is one of the most complete ever discovered. The space shuttle Discovery successfully docked with the International Space Station today. The crew now begins replacing the station's electrical system. Nissan says it will launch a next-generation fuel cell car in 4 years. The car would enhance fuel economy and reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Daimler Chrysler says it may lay off 4,000 of its North American workers next year. The company says the demand for trucks has diminished. The bidding for the Aston Martin unit of Ford Motors could reach $1.2 billion with the entry of a Syrian-born billionaire to the shortlist of potential buyers. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.28 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 21 points at 12,328. The NASDAQ up 5 at 2442. The S&P 500 up 3 at 1413. Gold ended trading today on NYMEX at $634.50 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5 and a half past the hour, and we move into the final hour of this evening's program, as our good friend Brian Reznor noted. And we do so by going immediately back to the phones. Our good friend Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
There we go.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that voice.
Agnes is a little slow on the draw this evening.
That's okay. It's a Monday. We're all slow today. I've been sitting here tonight watching this, Bush starting his little listening tour, and I'm sitting there going, he's already got the speech written.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, he's already trotting out the ideas. You know, I mean, they're the only people still talking about we're going to win. I mean, it's just like...
Well, how shallow, and I don't ask this rhetorically, Luke, how shallow are the American people, or how shallow do they think the American people are, that we can any longer tolerate talking about this as if it was some sort of damn football game?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like say that he's trying to frame it now. He's trying to say, you know, we can still win. I mean, that's what next week's speech is going to be. It's about how the fact that we have to win. You know, if we lose, it's all over, you know, and it's like, it's over. It's been over for a couple of years. I mean, they were sitting today, and I had not realized already that we're 11 days into the month, and they've already had 45 soldiers die so far.
Right.
11 days in.
Yeah, that's a little better than four a day.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at roughly 120, 125 for the month if it keeps at this rate. And that ain't even talking about the Iraqis.
Oh, no. They're dying in triple digits a day.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things that's like, it's over. I mean, right now, it's like, say, we're just wearing both sides on front and back on our shirts. You know, it's just, you know, if people in front of us want to shoot us, people in the back of us want to shoot us. No waiting. You know, I tell you what.
You know, yeah, this, you know, the British reporters actually got to ask dear leader some questions.
I love that.
Yeah, well, you know, the one where the question was put to him, why, given your track record on Iraq, should we believe you now? And he had no answer. You know, when he did get around to an answer, the best he could come back with was, you wanted frankness. I thought we would succeed quicker than we did, and I am disappointed by the pace of success. Well, you know what? I hate to be a nattering nabob of negativity, as Spiro T. Agnew would say. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I thought we would succeed quicker than we did. Well, you know, in May of 2003, on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln, unless I was hallucinating badly that day, he declared mission accomplished. Combat operations are now over in Iraq. Remember that?
Started packing up right then to get out.
Right. You know, when you stand there and you say, and I remember, I asked the question then, okay, major combat operations in Iraq have ended, cool, time to come home, and, you know, we win, yay. But we didn't, and we couldn't, and it would be another 7 months before he showed up on television again saying, we have dragged Saddam Hussein out of a spider hole in Iraq.
I loved it. You know, spent 7 months hunting for him, hiding, you know, hiding in a hole in the ground.
Yeah. But what the heck does that mean, Luke? I thought we would succeed quicker than we did, and I am disappointed by the pace of success. I don't think you could go to AltaVista.com and plug something into Babelfish and get that.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you sometimes, what's the thing, you know, where it's the word game where you have the magnetic thing where it's words and you put it together and it makes sense.
Oh, yeah, the refrigerator poetry?
Yeah, that's what it is. He's just putting words together, finding a sentence. Oh, there's something. Sounds good, yeah.
Well, it's like the spam I get in my email, because, you know, these guys...
Computer-generated?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, some of this stuff is just precious. I killed one out a couple of minutes ago that was just... it was a thing of beauty. Let's see, here we go. Colt forwards long directness Iolus thickens tame desideratum. Evita lectures sore cataclysm Ticonderoga motorizes. High suspector Claiborne reverberates doubtful nuclei Panchito angers hissing condiment. Jesus, that's a George Bush speech.
That's too complicated for him. But, well, you saw what the other thing was. You talked about the British guys asking the question, which I thought was great. It's like the rest of the news crews around there going, they asked him a hard question. Oh God!
What are they doing? Is he gonna send them to Gitmo now?
Well, you see what the new thing though is now is they look back at the old news thing and they said, okay, we'll do what Reagan did to Donaldson, and do what Bush did to Rather. All right, there's David Gregory. He's the enemy.
Yeah.
No matter what the question is, it's him.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's gonna, they're wanting to put the question that David Gregory is the question, so they'll forget. Everybody will forget what the question was he asked.
You know, yeah, right, because it becomes about the personality and not the substance.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, and, okay. You know, my advice to those British journalists and to David Gregory as well would be, you know, when you take the shower in the morning, if you find more hair than usual in the drain, have the wife run the Geiger counter over you. It sounds a little flippant, but these people are killers. They have killed 750,000 people in Iraq.
It's one of those things, it's sort of like, honey, you know, where we've been buying our milk, let's switch dairies, you know.
Yeah.
You know, all the food in the refrigerator is sold out, get some new food, you know, every once in a while, just for the heck of it. But, you know, the other one was, I heard somebody say this recently, and I hope it doesn't come to this, said that it's going to be interesting to watch as this next year goes along, because the longer this goes on, the more you're going to see Republicans start to get antsy.
Well, Gordon Smith is in the vanguard of that.
Mm-hmm. Because they're sitting there going, if we ain't out of Iraq by the end of the year, next year, excuse me, they know they're dead meat in 2008.
Well, you know, right, and I think Gordon Smith is a perfect example of that, Luke, because dude is from Oregon,
mm-hmm.
And they're not gonna put up with that kind of crap, and they will cashier him and find somebody that will end the war. You know, one of the reasons that Dennis Kucinich is so disgusted is that he says, this is a quote from him, Democrats were swept into power on November 7th because of widespread voter discontent with the war in Iraq. Instead of heeding those concerns and responding with a strong and immediate change in policies and direction, the Democratic congressional leadership seems inclined to continue funding the perpetuation of the war.
I know. It's one of those things where I mean, you know good and well they can't just cut the money off to the soldiers, and they aren't going to.
No.
I mean, that's just like stand here on the chair, put the noose around your neck, give a good kick, come on.
Yeah, but you know what? the war ends just as fast if you cut the money off to Halliburton.
That's where they really ought to push it. It's like, you know, all those contracts, congratulations, we're in. All those are now null and void.
You know, wonder how long the mercenary army will last in Iraq when the checks start coming through. Stop coming through. You know, what do those mercenaries make? $100,000 a year?
Was it Blackwater and some of those groups?
Blackwater and what is it? CSCI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like I say that ought to be added on to Miss Pelosi's list of her first 100 hours. Congratulations, all those contracts in, you know, what, 14 days, whatever, you know. 14 days from now, those contracts are over. If you all want to stay, stay. Otherwise, I'd be looking for new jobs.
I don't see a problem with that.
I don't either. I mean, you know, that's one of those things. It's like, you know, that like you say, that's the way you're going to have to get people's attention.
Yeah, congratulations, Halliburton mercenary. Planes now leaving Baghdad International daily.
Bechtel and KBR at the next gate. You know what I mean? It's like you say, that's the way you get their attention is, my golly, money's gone. No more paydays. Of course, y'all want to join over here to the guys in the reserve, you can just come in and join with them. They'll give you, what, you know, $150 a month or whatever. Hey!
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place. You know, you'll notice that I mentioned I've got the audio from one of Rummy's little blab fests.
Oh, God.
He traveled without press, but do you know who was with him on the plane?
The baby Jesus.
Yepers.
And they accused Gregory of partisanship.
Yeah, I mean,
who'd you take with you?
Yeah, the life support system for a haircut. Of course, you know, at least that lets us know once and for all that Sean Hannity is not to be considered in any way, shape, form, or fashion a journalist.
Oh no, I never did that. I just considered him taking up space, pretty much all I've ever considered him.
I wonder if they gave Hannity a variety of different shades of lipstick. Oh, I'm probably crossing the line. Never mind.
Just a little, but that's okay. It's a Monday. We got to start somewhere. You know how it is.
Hey, Luke, you take it easy, all right?
Y'all too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, you did know that, right? You did know that while they billed that no journalists went on the Rummy tour, that he took Sean Hannity with him? Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend, speaking of the great state of Oregon, our good friend Gene is calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
well, despite the last guest, I think I'll be able to choke down dinner.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, you were talking about how shallow the American people are. Well, I don't know about the American people, but I can kind of vouch for the Republicans. I'm looking at my DD right now, and the article I'm looking at says GOP candidates plan to run as Bush Republicans. And I'll just read one little teeny weeny paragraph.
Yeah, I can't wait for this.
The fight for the Bush family mantle demonstrates that even after the plunge in the president's popularity and the GOP thumping in the midterm elections, the family network remains the single most powerful force in Republican Party politics. And
oh, Jesus.
Dude, they must see a commercial that says, you too can have a 27% approval rating.
Sign up now. But now, really, there's a rift in the Bush family because, you know, Georgia's campaign advisor, that Tony Harris, who did the Harold, call me, that ad,
with the
ads with the jungle drums and stuff, he's going to McCain, and so is another Bush 43 critter. Meanwhile, people are now that Jebby is done being governor of Florida, people are jumping ship from his campaign to go work for Mitt Sacred Underwear Romney.
And they mentioned both of those in this article. But I didn't want to go into all that, but it's like, they just don't get it. I mean, it's...
Well, frankly, I rather hope that the Bush family just completely devolves into a proxy fight.
That would... I could live with that, but it's like... It's fantastic to see them. I mean, I guess if they have to be... this stupid. It's great fun to watch, but it's just scary. I mean, it's like not even the rank and file. It's like the attack vegan that is my therapist. I mean, he thinks meat is evil, but he supports the war in Iraq. Thinks it's just fantastic. You know, gotta support. You know, not scared of the Patriot. As long as he's done nothing wrong, he's just everything's fine by him. Like, I mean, it's like, well, what if a Democrat gets in office? Then are you going to feel something? Oh, it'll be fine. It'll never happen. They'll run Hillary. Da 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 da. Oh, God. One last question.
Sure.
Can I go ahead and stick a support candidate now tag in there?
Yeah, please. I would appreciate it if you would.
Thank you. I will.
And we, you know what? We need to turn around and send a screenshot to Kucinich's office right away too.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Gene.
Talk to you later.
All right. Have a great evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. Our good friend Gene, who is also the news ninja, and with Bruce out for the week, I guess I have to do this. Hi-ya! Boy, I don't do it like he does. Hi-ya! Okay, there. There we go. Yeah, Gene, our news ninja, who works in conjunction with our good friend Susan. The Oregon duo, if you will, to make everything happen cool on the headonradionetwork.com blog. Yeah, tomorrow, Dear Leader is going to have a video conference with what are described as senior U.S. senior military commanders, as well as the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad. After that, he hosts Iraqi Vice President Tariq al-Hashmi in the Oval Office. Then Wednesday, he has a meeting with Pentagon people. This is all on the heels of what he did last week, which was, among other things, a meeting with Abdul Aziz Hakim and the cup of coffee he had with the Iraq Study Group. Now, at the end of the day, please, let's understand none of this matters. Because, like Luke noted, he's going to keep talking in terms of, well, it's fourth down and it's fourth and 14, and we've just been penalized 5 yards for delay of game. But it's fourth and 14 on our own 2.5, and we are going to win in Iraq. That's all we're going to get. And the only way it changes. The only way it changes is if the American people themselves begin the dialogue themselves. It is the conversations that we have here. It is the conversations that you start among in your own neighborhoods that changes the future. That literally saves the lives of, God knows, 100, 1,000, 1,500. If by your actions you can save one American soldier's life and God knows how many hundreds of Iraqis, is your effort worth it? Please do not let out of your sight the fact that the difference between end the war now and end the war later is only going to be measured in bodies. It's not going to be measured in the way forward, and it's not going to be measured in benchmarks. It's going to be measured in human lives. And staying costs more lives than leaving.
Oh, but Jesus, Bob, we're going to have a meltdown in the Middle East.
The minute that the first missile flew in March of 2003, we made sure of that meltdown. And, you know, I mean, I don't recommend reading right-wing stuff. But if you go and you read the books that were put out there by people like Brent Scowcroft or Bush's own memoirs, I mean by Bush 41, bailout Bush, not W. If you read that stuff, you will find out that they knew this. Baker knew it. Scowcroft knew it. That's why in, January, February 2001, Colin Powell is standing there in Egypt, of all places, telling people that Saddam Hussein is no longer able to be a threat to his neighbors. He doesn't, look for it yourself. Maybe it's on YouTube by now. But he says, Saddam Hussein is not a threat to his neighbors. He doesn't couch it in any sort of speculative fashion. And then 5 or 6 months later, I think it's July 2001, Condoleezza Rice shows up on Wolf Blitzer's show and tells him that the United States knows that Saddam Hussein can pose no threat to anyone around them. Go and, you know, go and have a look. Read it for yourself. See it for yourself. Hear it for yourself. Deal with your own lying ears and eyes. And then once you do, pay attention to what Dear Leader says when he starts talking about victory again. Then you get the doublespeak from people like Dan Bartlett in the White House. Well, this is unusually intensive, as you would expect, given the situation we find ourselves in. It's a very complex set of issues, ranging from military strategy and tactical decisions to economic and political and diplomatic matters and mersey-dotes and dozy-dotes and little lambsy-divey and a kiddly-divey, too, wouldn't you, wouldn't you? ...27%, he's at. You know, I'd taken to referring to the people who still support George Bush as 30%ers. And I've already got to change it. The 27%ers. But you know what? They're there. They're still out there. And they're still hateful and virulent and nasty and, more than anything else, self-deluded. And the 27%ers still can't come to grips with the fact that that they are personally responsible for the 750,000 dead Iraqi civilians and the 3,000 dead Americans. They can't come to grips with it. Oh, no, I just voted for him. I'm not, you know. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you damned well are. And I don't know about you, but I don't have any patience for it anymore. You know, we talked earlier about the Bob Herbert column from the New York Times, and Bob Herbert was talking about was referencing the Iraq Study Group's report of the growing endless pessimism in Iraq. When all the Bush administration wants to talk about is some damn soccer field. Well, this is the latest, and you can get it over at TomDispatch.com. This is the latest from one of the great journalists to come out of this war, because he actually did some of the work. He's not like whoever that fool was when the thing started up on his video phone back to CNN. Well, you know what? This is some of the best fun I've ever had. I will never forget that for as long as I live. An embedded reporter flying across the blazing sands. This is some of the best fun I have ever had. No, Dar Jamal has actually seen what went down. You know, that the Right Honorable John Wilson mentioned the half the proceeds, or some of the proceeds, or $2.25 worth of the proceeds, are going to some fund for a law student from his own law school who was killed in Fallujah. See, I've gotten to the point where you mention the word Fallujah to me, and my whole body just shakes for the horror that went down there. Remember Fallujah? That was the place where we used white phosphorus on civilians. Dar Jamal saw what went down in Fallujah. Dar Jamal is going to be in West Virginia on February the 13th, and unless I'm mistaken, we will have Dar Jamal live then as our very special and honored guest. But he writes, and again, this is from TomDispatch.com. I'm sure it appears many other places as well. The situation in Iraq has reached such a point of degradation and danger that I've been unable to return to report as I did from 2003 to 2005 from the front lines of daily life. Instead, in these last months, I've found myself in a supportive role, facilitating the work of some of my former sources who remain in their own war-torn land to tell their hair-raising tales of the new Iraq. While relying on my Iraqi colleagues to report the news, which we then publish at Interpress Service and my website, I continue to receive emails from others in Iraq, civilian and soldier alike. What I know from these emails is that the articles on Iraq you normally read in your local newspaper, even when, for instance, they cover the disintegration of the Iraqi health system or the collapse of the economy, are providing you at best but a glimpse of what daily life there is now like. After all, who knows better what's happening than those who are living it? Well, the Kurds are happy. Bob, shut up. I thought I might just give you a taste of the sort of private communications I read every day. Take my primary interpreter during my 8 months in Iraq, Abu Talat. He was finally forced, like hundreds of thousands of his fellow Iraqis, to flee to a neighboring country due to the nightmarish security situation in Baghdad. Without a regular income, he struggled even to pay the rent for an apartment in a Syrian city, and finally had no choice but to return to Baghdad to sell what was left of his belongings. On November 18th, he wrote me from there, quote, "I'm trying to sell my car. However, prices have plummeted so low that there's barely any active automobile dealing here, or any other marketing for that matter. Life ends at about 2-3 p.m., at which point Baghdad changes into a city of horror. The sounds of mortars and clashes erupt all through the night. Two explosions just rumbled nearby, but we can't tell the exact location. The next day, Dar Jamal says, he wrote, "Today, while I was arranging for the car to be sold at the highest price I could find, explosions burst almost 50 meters from the place where I was standing. I was forced to hide under the car I was selling for over 2 hours. There were ongoing clashes between the Iraqi army and resistance fighters in broad daylight in the middle of the capital." That's how bold the resistance has become. And they're resisting the Iraqi army because the Iraqi army is deemed to be a tool of us. Jamal goes on and says, "Even from semi-independent Kurdish-controlled northern Iraq, often described as the most peaceful and prosperous region in the country, the news I get is bleak. A November 28th email from a Kurdish friend who is also a U.S. citizen went this way. It is worse than ever. The problem is that our U.S. government and the Iraqi government tell the world that things are improving here when they are not. All of the rebuilding bull crap is nothing but a scam that is worse than the oil for food program." Get that? Worse than the oil for food program. "We have 1 hour of electricity a day now. I have power to turn on some lights and my computer by way of a little generator that I hook up to my office today. A gallon of gas costs over $4 now, when the salary of an engineer is less than $200 a month." Here's some more email. "Life here in Iraq has become impossible because of the militias, sectarian violence, and the occupation forces." That's us. "Every day we see the dead bodies near our homes, which have been killed by militias. We watch how the U.S. troops see these dead bodies and do nothing to stop this violence. Two of my brothers just left their houses and rented a new place because they were living in a Shia area. They had to run away just because they're Sunni. Every day the U.S. troops raid so many houses in my area and arrest so many innocent people, yet when the Americans arrest one of the Shia militia members, they release him for the very next day. Why?" "Oh, Dar, I don't know what to say about my wounded country. Every Iraqi wants to bomb himself because of this shit life. Now, Iraq is nothing like it was when you were here last, as bad as it was then. It has become very difficult to find someone who smiles. Everyone is sad and crying. This is true, and this is our life now." This is just astonishing. Abu Talat wrote him on November 29th, "In the early morning, explosions woke me up in this apartment in the center of Baghdad. It was just before 5:30 a.m. when I heard four mortars exploding in their very horrendous voices. The Ministry of Health was hit the day before yesterday by not less than five mortars. This was followed by clashes which continued for less than an hour. The fighters were using all kinds of guns, starting with rifles and ending with real heavy weaponry. Iraqi life has changed into some kind of hellish disaster. Sectarian feelings are following us everywhere. Everywhere around Baghdad that you stop at any of the checkpoints, which are spreading all over, the men hold their guns in their hands. I assume each man knows how to use it, but the problem is this guard a Sunni or Shia? You can't tell. The clashes I've been seeing haven't spared any of the areas in the city, whether they are Sunni or Shia. Keep in mind that we're talking about the capital of Iraq. Think Washington, D.C., and try for a moment to imagine such daily scenes. It goes on, it goes on. And he says, how much worse can it get in Iraq? My Iraqi friends and colleagues tell me that one of the more popular sayings in Baghdad these days is, quote, today is better than tomorrow. You got to wonder how that man at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue would respond to reading the words of Dar Jamal. Wait a minute, what am I talking about? Reading. Get over it, Bob. But that's where, you know, that. But today is better than tomorrow. Imagine leading a life where you tell yourself that today is better than tomorrow. It's not, you know, it's not going to get better tomorrow. It's not Vivian Lee standing there wearing the, you know, wearing the living room drape saying tomorrow is another day. It is a recognition that today was hell and tomorrow will be even more so. Now, just in case you were wondering how the top brass responds to this kind of thing, well, you might want to have a look at something called Christian Embassy. Christian Embassy is a group that evangelizes the military leaders and politicians and diplomats in Washington. They work the military hard. Now, bear in mind that there are defense, before I tell you the rest of this, there are Defense Department regulations barring personnel from appearing in uniform in speeches, interviews, picket lines, marches, rallies, or any public demonstration which may imply service sanction of the cause for which the demonstration or activity is conducted. Well, a military watchdog group, this from the Washington Post, a military watchdog group is asking the Defense Department to investigate whether seven Army and Air Force officers violated regulations by appearing in uniform in a promotional video for ChristianEmbassy.com. The video itself was mostly filmed inside the Pentagon. This is, now we're not talking about some low-rent second Louis, okay? Four generals and three colonels on screen praising Christian Embassy. Air Force Major General Jack J. Catton Jr. says, I found a wonderful opportunity as a director on the joint staff as I meet the people that come into my directorate. And I tell them right up front who Jack Catton is, and I start with the fact that I'm an old-fashioned American, and my first priority is my faith in God, then my family, and then country. I share my faith because it describes who I am. Pete Guerin is also in the video. He's a former acting secretary of the Air Force. He's the one who whitewashed the Air Force's response in 2005, to the claims that if evangelical Christians were pressuring cadets at the Air Force Academy. Remember the chief chief chaplain of the Air Force, either was resigned or pressured into quitting because of her objections. He describes in the video Christian Embassy as a rock that I can rely on, an organization that helped me in my walk with Christ, and I'm just thankful for the service they give. You want to see this piece of garbage? ChristianEmbassy.com. The video is there. Army Brigadier General Bob Kaysen is in the video. Whenever he sees another fellowship member, I immediately feel like I'm being held accountable because we are the aroma of Jesus Christ. He's the aroma of Jesus! Let me make sure I got that right. I read it before I came on the air. I'm reading it again. I immediately feel like I am being held accountable because we are the aroma of Jesus Christ. I didn't even know it was for sale. I've been getting along all this time with a little little Aqua Velva. Sandalwood. Old Spice. Well, okay, old frankincense and myrrh. Jiminy. I can't believe this. Now, thank God for, isn't that funny, for the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. It was founded by retired Air Force lawyer Michael L. Mikey Weinstein. He was a White House lawyer in the Reagan administration. And if you want to go back in the archives, our good friend Mark Levine is very good about noting the content of his individual programs. He had Mikey Weinstein on the show, and you can hear in detailed horror exactly what's going on inside the military that you're paying for, and that's being used like some tarted up tramp by the religion industry. The aroma of Jesus Christ?
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Mandrake, do you ever see me drink anything but rainwater? That's right, I drink rainwater. Fluoridation. Fluoridation, Mandrake. If I drink fluoridated water, it dilutes the essence and aroma of Jesus Christ. Said it before, I'll say it again. Dr. Strangelove's not funny anymore. I immediately feel like I'm being held accountable because we are the aroma of Jesus Christ. One of the things that Weinstein points out is that all the officers are identified in the video by their Defense Department positions, yet the video failed to include any disclaimer indicating that the views expressed were not those of the Department of Defense. That's because they are the views of the Department of Defense, because our military has been invaded, has been corrupted from the inside out by the religion industry. Why do you think Focus on the Families in Colorado Springs, sunshine? Go listen to the interview with Mikey Weinstein on Mark Levine's archives. You'll hear a story about students being compelled to go to the evangelical services. The article, of course, reminds us of good old Army Lieutenant General William G. Jerry Boykin, who appeared in uniform before church groups to talk about his experiences as a hero in Somalia, where he said that he knew that he was going to win because our God is bigger than their God and Muslims worship an idol. Of course, one of those speeches was the time that he also said that George W. Bush was appointed by God. Now, he said all of that, and still the Inspector General's office made a finding that Boykin had not violated any rules. Anybody care to guess where Jerry Boykin is now? That's right, Jerry Boykin's working the intelligence gig on Iraq. Lord, doesn't it all just come together and make sense now? Mother McCree. So they might enjoy the upswing in hits, but yeah. You can go and watch this really creepy video that includes the business about the aroma of Jesus Christ. You know, I get up in the morning and I take my shower and I dry off with the Shroud of Turin. That's how I get my aroma of Jesus Christ. It goes on and on and on. I mean, I don't mean to get you down or anything, but we're in a war. And it ain't with the Muslims. We are in a philosophical, not a shooting, but a philosophical war with people who think that war itself is something that winds up with wins and losses. Jeebus. Wow. So that... You know, that's the kind of thing that we got to fix. These religion thugs in the Bush administration turned the military over to a bunch of people who believe that Adam and Eve rode to Sunday school every Sunday on the back of a dinosaur. That's just profound. It's just profound. And a little news closer to home, by the way. The State Office of Mine Safety and Training was supposed to release the final SAGO report today. It was delayed because family members from SAGO got wind of it and had a fit. Because, among other things, and scientists in the audience are welcome to chime in on this. The officials have concluded that it was lightning that triggered the blast. Now, bear in mind that the lightning, and, you know, they say they're 100% sure it was lightning. The lightning that started the blast struck a hillside that was a mile and a half from the mine. Then the lightning traveled many hundreds of feet under the ground and into the mine. There weren't any wires. There weren't any metal rods. There weren't any things to conduct the lightning into the mine. It was a miracle. It was a negative miracle. But it was the lightning. Because, you see, we have to say it was the lightning, or else we have to deal with something that rises to the level of negligent homicide, at the very least, on the part of the International Coal Group. And we have to have discussions about what happens in non-union holes, where men and women have to go into the hole even though they know that it's dank and it's full of gas. Because they can't turn around and look and say, "Nah, not today," because they don't have any kind of protection. So you blame it on the lightning miracle. Now, again, mile and a half away, top of a hill. Mine is way the hell under a hill. And the lightning hits yellow poplar. And they're saying that the lightning strike was 101 kiloamperes. 101,000 amps. And it hit the tree. I mean, help me here, electrical people. I mean, we'll save this maybe for a... this is where our good buddy Bruce Birch would come in handy, because Bruce is an electrician. Certified electrical contractor, he is. You know, I learned about, ground. John Fox, you listening? That you take electricity into the ground to dissipate it? But in this case, instead of dissipating, the lightning strike traveled in perfect order, a mile and a half across and hundreds of feet down, to cause an explosion inside a mine that killed 12 people. That is some smart electricity. And all the time that I thought you sent electricity into the ground to dissipate it. And now it turns out, damn, I'm scared. Now it turns out that electricity just travels in a straight line. When it goes into the ground through a yellow poplar, is this something about yellow poplars? Do we need to get all the yellow poplars away from the coal mines? Or do we maybe need to pass the Employees' Free Choice Act that will allow those miners in those non-union holes to have the protection of an organized negotiating body who will have a shop steward or a safety representative they can go to and say, I don't think it's safe. Because remember, the Sago mine had been closed down. Was it the Sago mine or the Aracoma mine where the man who was responsible for checking out the safety of the mine recently blew his own brains out? It was Sago. And then from, just so you can know that this is going to happen again and again and again, because we are not addressing the root cause. It'll happen again because we're not addressing the fact. We're talking about miracle lightning instead of the fact that people are sent into places they have no business being. Separate company, same kind of sleazy conduct. This from December 8th, the Charleston Gazette. A Massey Energy foreman testified on Thursday that company managers told him, listen, company managers told him not to perform pre-shift safety examinations, but to sign records falsely indicating that he had done the checks. William Edwin Wine described the instructions he'd received during a hearing before U.S. District Judge John T. Copenhaver. I was told to do it this way by my supervisors, by my bosses. He testified at a hearing in the federal government's motion to disqualify a law firm. That has nothing really to do with it. Wine has been charged with failing to perform the pre-shift examination in June 2002. And he's owning up to it. AMSHA lead investigator repeatedly questioned whether lawyers for Massey were representing both Massey and individual miners. See, that's another way you do that. It's one of the nice things when you've got a union, you get your own lawyer. You don't have to have the company's lawyer. Wine testified he told escalating levels of Massey managers, all the way up to company safety director Frank Foster, that his bosses at White Buck Coal told him to falsify the pre-shift examination books at the company's Grassy Creek No. 1 mine in Nicholas County. It's about 10 miles from here. I swore to them on my kid's life that this was what I was told to do, Wine told Judge Copenhaver at the hearing. What did Massey do when he complained about it? They suspended him for a week with pay, and then suspended him for a week without pay. And it went on and on. And this kind of stuff kills people. Meanwhile, after all this went on, Wine had moved to a job at Massey's Mammoth operation in Cannelton Hollow, along the Kanawha-Fayette County line. The Mammoth operation is where Massey bought out the mine and threw out all the workers' pensions and canceled all the retirement benefits and the health care. And they even came to this man and told him to fire the lawyer he had personally hired and go with the company's lawyers. We're talking here about killers. But at any rate, the families of Sago said that the report doesn't have adequate information. And the report was ordered pulled by Governor Manchin, who said it will be redone and that it'll be available later. They're saying it'll be about a week. According to the draft report, it says how the electricity from the lightning entered the sealed area is still under investigation, and in that regard, this report is not complete. Don't think it'll ever be complete as long as they're talking about miracle lightning. Lightning that hits the ground and doesn't dissipate. Lightning that travels in a straight line once it hits the ground and goes a mile and a half out and several hundred feet down with a will. That's not what caused the death at Sago. Failed self-contained, self-breathing rescuers caused the death at Sago. Unending lust for more money caused the death at Sago. And men who measure human lives in dollar figures caused the death at Sago. Lightning. Please. We're not that dumb. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this evening. I'm going to go and wash all the right-wing ickiness off of me now. I promise I won't do that to you again for a while. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox engineers. He knows what amperes and joules and volts and wattages do. And sometimes he tells us. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains all the streams, archives, and podcasts of every program on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to listen to a podcast or take down an archive or listen to this show, he never sends a bill. Just got to do the right thing. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional, not feeling so good. Get yourself some rest, Peter. We'll get after it again when you're feeling better. All the programs on the Head On Radio Network are brought to you because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. who get up every day and go and build the American dream. And in building the American dream and supporting this network, they're also trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Today, President Bush went to the State Department to go over diplomatic options in the Iraq War. He continues to consult with others as he charts a new course in Iraq. Any changes in the president's policy are expected to be announced in a speech he will give sometime before Christmas. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan gave a farewell address today at the Truman Presidential Museum and Library in Independence, Missouri. He warned the United States not to give up its democratic ideals while fighting the war on terrorism. Iraqi President Jalal Talabani, a Kurd, is rejecting the Iraq Study Group report, saying its recommendations are an insult to the people of Iraq and dangerous to the country's sovereignty and constitution. The White House denied a report today that it is trying to organize Shiites in Iraq to oust current Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. White House spokesman Tony Snow denied everything about the media report. In the western Anbar province, a Sunni stronghold, a U.S. Marine helicopter made a hard landing during a routine flight today. The U.S. military said 18 of the 21 Marines on board were injured. This was the third U.S. military aircraft in the past 2 weeks to go down in that region. In Baghdad, the U.S. military said today that 4 U.S. soldiers were killed and 3 were wounded by 2 separate roadside bombs. That brings the U.S. death toll in December to at least 46. Around Baghdad today, at least 51 Iraqis were killed in violence. In Tehran, a conference on whether the Holocaust really occurred began today at the initiation of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The meeting has been condemned by Israel and Germany. In Gaza City today, 3 children and an adult were killed in what is being called a botched assassination attempt. The children were the young sons of a senior Palestinian intelligence officer. In Santiago, Chile, supporters of ex-general